It's 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Desperate migrants in search of a better life in Europe. Hundreds of cold, anxious, frustrated migrants clashed with Hungarian police Monday as they attempted to push northward toward Budapest, Austria, and Germany. As the flow of people from the Middle East, Africa, and South Asia seeking safety from war, poverty, and persecution continues. Hungary is now granting passage to the Austrian border for those who state they're refugees and not economic migrants. Germany, expecting as many as 800,000 refugees this year, is urging its European partners to do more. Meanwhile, Greece has asked the European Union for aid as it becomes overwhelmed by the migrant tide. Former Chadian dictator Ihsen Habré had to be carried into court Monday after he refused to take part in his trial on war crimes charges. The 72-year-old Habré, who refuses the legitimacy of the extraordinary African chambers, had to be physically restrained and shouted abuse at court officials in Dakar.
Donc, Ihsen Habré, il est présumé innocent. Les preuves seront présentées.
Human Rights Watch official Reed Brody says Mr. Habré is presumed to be innocent. Evidence will be presented, he says. Whether the former Chadian leader likes it or not, whether he participates or not, the court will judge him. Habré's government is accused of being responsible for some 40,000 deaths during his 8-year rule in Chad, which began in 1982. He is being tried in Senegal, where he lived in exile for more than 20 years after being toppled in a 1990 coup. Habré faces charges of war crimes and torture, in addition to crimes against humanity, and could be imprisoned for up to 40 years if convicted. This is VOA News. British Prime Minister David Cameron Monday said a Royal Air Force drone killed 3 Islamic State militants in Syria, including 2 Britons. Mr. Cameron spoke in Parliament.
Now, Mr. Speaker, in recent weeks it's been reported that 2 ISIL fighters of British nationality who had been plotting attacks against the UK and other countries have been killed in airstrikes. Both Junaid Hussein and Rayad Khan were British nationals based in Syria who were involved in actively recruiting ISIL sympathisers and seeking to orchestrate specific and barbaric attacks against the West.
Calling the August 21st drone strike an act of self-defense, Mr. Cameron said there was clear evidence the individuals in question planned and directed armed attacks against the UK. They were killed while traveling in a vehicle near the de facto IS capital of Raqqa in Syria. While Britain participates in anti-IS strikes in Iraq and uses unmanned aircraft to gather intelligence in Syria, the Royal Air Force has not targeted the IS group in Syria before. Some 500 to 600 Britons have traveled to fight with IS alongside thousands of other foreigners. Greece says the U.S. is asking it to take permission for Russian planes, to take back permission for Russian planes to use its airspace on their way to Syria. A foreign ministry spokesman in Athens says Greece is considering the request. The U.S. is becoming more concerned over reports of a possible Russian military buildup in Syria. Italy's high court has faulted prosecutors for their case against American Amanda Knox and her former Italian boyfriend, acquitted for the murder of Knox's British roommate, saying the case had flaws. The court Monday issued a formal explanation as required by law of its March ruling that acquitted Knox and Rafael Solicito, ending a years-long high-profile case. Carlo Dalla Vedova is a defense attorney.
So the motivation of the conviction that has been cancelled and the decision by the Supreme Court to decide also in the merit with the acquittal is mainly based on the points that we, the defense, have always mentioned, the lack of evidence and the uncertainties of the entire reconstruction of the accusation.
In the 52-page document, the Court of Cassation said there was no biological trace linking the two to the murder of British student Meredith Kircher. Knox and Solicito each served 4 years in prison for the murder in a legal saga that saw the two of them convicted, acquitted, convicted again, and finally cleared by the High Court. In Libya, troops loyal to the internationally recognized government in the east repelled Islamic State militants but lost several soldiers southwest of Benghazi. 2 accounts say between 3 and 7 members of the Libyan National Army were killed as IS militants fought to gain control of military equipment, including tanks and vehicles. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Tuesday, September 8th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan's government says it will ratify recent peace deal, but blames IGA for any likely delays.
The agreement will be ratified tomorrow or next tomorrow, as the case may be. But one important thing to say is this. The government of South Sudan is fully holding the IGAD responsible for whatever delays in the implementation of the agreement.
Michael Makui, South Sudan's information minister. The International Monetary Fund says Zimbabwe should reform its labor laws as a path to economic growth. And Nigeria's president says his military is gaining grounds on Boko Haram.
One thing I have to tell you is that we have a timeline given by Mr. President, and we are working towards meeting up with that timeline. And I can rest assure you that we are going to succeed even before the expiration of the timeline.
Colonel Sani Kukasheka Osman is the spokesman for Nigeria's military. A roaster aims to build up Nigeria's coffee crop and culture. Britain accepts thousands of Syrian refugees, and musicians highlight the need for solar power in the world's poorest countries. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South Sudan's government says it will Tuesday present to its national legislature the peace agreement signed last month between the government and rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar to end nearly 2 years of conflict. Information Minister Michael Makui says after receiving the document, the legislature will set up committees to study and propose a final resolution on the adoption of the agreement. The rebels have already said they are likely to ratify the agreement today, Tuesday. Michael Makui said any delay on the part of the government of South Sudan in the approval of the agreement should be blamed on IGA, because after President Salva Kiir signed the agreement on August 26, IGA took away the remaining pages of the document without giving the president the opportunity to initiate the pages.
The agreement on the resolution on conflict on South Sudan says that it should be presented to the National Legislature and the National Liberation Council of the rebels within 7 days. After the signing of the agreement, the IGAD decided to take all the documents to Addis. It did not bring them back in time, except that it brought them back on the 3rd. After the receipt of the documents on the 3rd, the Council of Ministers sat and discussed the agreement, and it passed it to the National Legislature with reservations. That was on the 4th. Tomorrow, Tuesday, the government will table the agreement before the National Legislature. After tabling it, the National Legislature will set up committees to study and come up with a final resolution on the adoption of the agreement.
So, Mr. Minister, your government is not having cold feet in terms of ratifying the agreement. You are going to ratify the agreement.
The agreement will be ratified tomorrow or next tomorrow, as the case may be. But one important thing to say is this. The government of South Sudan is fully holding the IGAD responsible for whatever delays in the implementation of the agreement.
What do you mean?
What I mean is that the IGAD, when the president signed the last pages of the agreement, they decided to take away the whole agreement without giving the president the opportunity to initial the other pages of the agreement. And they went and put it on their website. After realizing that the president did not initial all the pages, we call on them to bring back the original signed agreement for initialing by the president. And they back on the 3rd. On the 4th, the president initialed the other pages of the agreement. So it is IGAD that is responsible for whatever delays that might have taken place.
My concern is your government going to meet the deadline to ratify the agreement?
What is the deadline for the ratification of the agreement?
I thought there was a deadline.
Well, but the problem is this. The deadline for ratification of the agreement is dependent on the D-Day. What is the D-Day? By the D-Day, we mean the date of coming into effect of the agreement. Up to this moment, the IGAD has not told us what is the D-Day.
Mr. Minister, there was supposed to be some kind of a workshop in Addis Ababa. Does your government know why that was postponed?
Well, the workshop was supposed to be on the 6th. We were supposed to turn in our delegates, our representatives on the 4th. And the government of South Sudan sent in the list of representatives of the second to IGAD, understanding that they will send in the tickets and that they will make all the other preparations before the 4th. Our delegation was prepared to go on the 4th. To our surprise, on the night of the 3rd, we received a message from IGAD telling us that due to the delay in the list of participants in the workshop, and due to other logistical problems being faced by IGAD, the workshop has been called off until further notice.
Michael Makwe is South Sudan's information minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari says his military has been gaining grounds on the militant group Boko Haram. Buhari, who paid a one-day visit to Ghana on Monday, told reporters in the capital Accra that the Nigerian military has made tremendous progress, as evident by the insurgents being limited only to the Sambisa forest. Nigeria's military spokesman, Colonel Sani Kukasheka Osman, says the military is working towards meeting the president's timeline even before it comes up.
Right now, we are in the city of Maiduguri. We're having the Regimental Sergeant Major's Convention. And personally, I just took a walk for over 10 kilometers, and everywhere is cool and calm. And if you notice of recent, there is no serious incidents of terrorist attack. Anybody with common knowledge about the insurgency and terrorism in Nigeria would have known that Maiduguri is a hotbed of Boko Haram terrorists in those days. But now it is no more.
Does that mean the military has driven Boko Haram out of Maiduguri completely?
That is a long time ago. Even the isolated suicide bombings we have been having in those days before, they have not been occurring, okay? And we are trying the best we could to make sure that we have brought the insurgency and terrorism to an end so that there will be peace and prosperity in the country.
Is there a realization, Colonel, in the military that the defeat of Boko Haram may not come easily, that more has to be done to completely defeat Boko Haram?
Naturally, nothing comes easy in life, talk less of fight against terrorists and insurgents. But one thing I have to tell you is that we have a timeline given by Mr. President, and we are working towards meeting up with that timeline. And I can rest assure you that we are going to succeed even before the expiration of the timeline.
Is the military getting cooperation from the locals, people on the ground in Maiduguri and, say, other parts of the northeast of Nigeria? Because we seem to understand that Boko Haram tend to play among the locals. Are you getting cooperation?
Yeah. If you noticed last Wednesday, I had to address a news conference in which I praise the cooperation and the resilience of average Nigerians, because they are now volunteering information more than ever before. If you notice, it was the volunteers of the information that were able to discover some of their improvised explosive device-making factories, and we destroyed them. And some other routes, supply routes, and converging points, and we're able to take action against that. And they are cooperating, and things are getting better on a daily basis, because they realize no army can win a war, but a nation wins a war. Invariably, it is a collective responsibility to solve the problem of insurgency and terrorism in this country.
Colonel, what can you tell us? Some time ago, we read a couple of days ago that an alleged commander of Boko Haram had been captured.
Yeah, over time, whenever we have, carried out offensive, we're able to capture one or two. But the case in point you are referring to, actually, it was a local commander somewhere around Goza. And apart from him, a high contact person and a foot soldier, about three of them. And you could recall somewhere around Gaydem too, high-profile terrorists were about escaping. Remember, the Nigerian Air Force has been doing a marvelous job, pounding their policy. So they are trying to escape here and there, and they were able to arrest two key members. There are so many arrests like that.
Colonel Sani Kukasheka Osman is spokesman for the Nigerian military. He was speaking with me from Maiduguri. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today's Tuesday, the 8th day of September. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. Like many of its cash crops, Nigeria's coffee sector has been neglected for years and in favor of more lucrative commodities like oil. But as Chris Tyne reports from Lagos, one of the few commercial coffee roasters in the country plans to change that.
The coffee found on the streets and in the supermarkets of Nigeria is mostly of the instant sort and almost always imported. But Nasra Ali thinks Nigerians are ready for something different. A daughter of a Kenyan coffee family, she runs Kaldi Africa, which takes beans grown in eastern Taraba State and roasts them in a warehouse in the commercial capital Lagos to make perhaps Nigeria's only local blend. Ali is counting on the country's rising consumer class to shun imports in favor of her homegrown brew.
We are trying to see how to be able to be part of that growth with our value addition and ensuring that you really are able to appreciate good coffee in Nigeria.
Agriculture was once a major part of Nigeria's economy, but fell by the wayside as oil production began dominating the economy in the 1960s. President Muhammadu Buhari says he wants to build up the agriculture sector, although he has yet to appoint ministers to carry that out. Head of Operations Alfred Mwai says one of Kaldi Africa's goals is to work with farmers to improve the quality of Nigeria's beans.
Are you able to bring up practices that you really be able to process the coffee to a very, you know, quite clean level, which will of course go to the next level of specialty coffee?
In the meantime, the company hopes not just to win over customers, but to make good coffee a part of Nigerians' morning ritual. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
The International Monetary Fund says Zimbabwe should reform its labor laws and revive the country's industrial capacity if it is to start experiencing an economic boom. Thomas Chiripasi of VOA Zimbabwe Service reports from Harare.
The IMF's alternate executive director for its Africa Group 1 constituency, that includes Zimbabwe, Chileshe Mpumbu Kaprepre, told a news conference in the capital that Harare should reform labor laws and reopen closed industries to improve the country's productive capacity. Hundreds of companies have closed shop since the disputed 2013 elections, while more than 25,000 employees have lost their jobs this year alone, according to the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions. Kaprepre says reopening industries and reforming labor laws would act as catalysts in reviving the country's moribund economy.
There's been some progress on labor reforms, which was also another constraint, I think, on the economy. We hope that government will take the steps that have been articulated to us in terms of further reform to remove the constraints that are affecting the growth of the economy.
Kaprepke, who is Zambia's former deputy finance minister, says the IMF is happy with Zimbabwe's implementation of the staff monitored program, although it has some areas of concern.
The question of the impact of the drought on the food production, I think we see that as a major challenge. And also we look at the underperformance in the manufacturing capacity, which are all major contributors to the revenue side.
Meanwhile, Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa says the government has asked for a meeting with the international creditors that include the IMF, World Bank and the African Development Bank on the sidelines of the World Bank annual general meeting in Peru's capital Lima, so that Zimbabwe can present its case for fresh funding that it badly needs to inject into the economy. The minister said the country is battling to clear its debt arrears that now amount to $1.8 billion. Authorities say the country's debt overhang is hovering around $10 billion.
But we agreed this at the spring meetings that we should have a platform to engage and present our case to the multilateral creditors, the Paris Club creditors, the major decision makers.
As a result of Zimbabwe's failure to clear its debt, Harare is failing to access fresh lines of credit from international money lending institutions. Meanwhile, Chinamasa said the economic slowdown in China is affecting trade between Harare and Beijing. Reporting from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
The influx of refugees from Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan to Europe is showing no signs of slowing. Aid workers and Hungarian officials said at least another 2,000 people crossed through a gap in the fence between Serbia and Hungary. VOA Europe correspondent Luis Ramirez reports from the scene at the border.
It is a steady stream of humanity flowing all day, every day for the past week. They come telling similar stories of fleeing for their lives in Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan.
I really want to go to a place where I should be alive. To be alive.
This railroad connecting Serbia to Hungary is their path to safety, and relief workers say word that Hungary is now giving them passage is encouraging them to keep coming.
Every day, thousands of people come across. Only today, it's more than 2,000 people who have crossed this borderline here, which means that they have entered the European Union.
EU governments are trying to figure out how to deal with the influx. Here, Hungarian police struggle to control a group they're escorting to a registration center. Hungary is granting passage to the Austrian border to those who prove they are refugees and not economic migrants. Most want to go to Germany. They have come this far and they fear being sent back. At a gap in the border fence, a group waits.
Some of them are waiting here. They're waiting to decide whether to enter Hungary illegally or not. Because if they enter, then their fingerprints will be taken and they will be registered in Hungary.
Hungary has been working to fortify this border fence with razor wire. But it is this gap of a few meters that has served as a gateway for thousands of migrants, with many more on the way. Luis Ramirez, VOA News, at Hungary's border with Serbia.
Canadian Indian singer Rajiv Mathur describes his music as unabashedly pop, but recently his song Until the Sun Comes Up has been used to raise awareness of the needs of the developing world, especially in Africa. VOA's David Byrd takes a look at the song and how it changed the singer's life and the lives of some Tanzania school children.
If you listen to the words of Canadian crooner Raghav's song, Until the Sun Comes Up, you might think it is just another dance-based pop tune. You wouldn't know it is helping to transform the lives of school children in a small African village. Here we go tonight, baby, you and I, where the stars shining bright. It's just the two of us until the sun comes up. Raghav says that when he learned that there are currently more than 1 billion people living in the world without electricity, he wanted to help.
That 1.3 billion people have no electricity. And so when I say that number, people often think, I mean to say a million. I mean, it's a sixth of the planet has zero electricity. And until you go there, and not just go there, but experience the, or hear the stories of the negative experiences through the kerosene industry, you can't really totally understand the impact.
So he teamed with Solar Aid, a nonprofit dedicated to eliminating the kerosene lamp, to distribute 320 solar-powered lights to school-age children in Tanzania. Raghav says he got the idea from watching an old YouTube video.
And they take a bucket of water and they put it in a village in like India or Bangladesh or somewhere, in what is clearly an impoverished village. And in it they've put a light. And I think at first people kind of look at it like, you know, what is this hanging around here? And throughout the YouTube video, you see people start coming up to it, playing with it, and the joy that it creates. And I thought, well, what a great way to depict joy if we could incorporate that in like a pop record. Just as the sun comes up. Here we go.
Raghav teamed with rapper Nelly and Bollywood star Abhishek Bachchan to film the reaction of the students when they receive the lights. The singer says that the joy seen in the video is real. None of it was staged or choreographed.
They just were having such a great time.
The lights will help the students study for more than 375,000 hours and will save their parents nearly $60,000 that would have been spent on kerosene and candles for them to study by. I'm David Byrd, VOA News.
I don't ever want.
It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mango Woman in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin at the All Africa Games in Brazzaville, Republic of Congo. Egypt won the lion's share of gold medals in the fencing contest that ended on Monday. Alaeldin Abul Qasim and Ahmed El Sagir won men's foil and epee contests, respectively, while Tunisia's Faris Ferjani triumphed in the individual sabre event. Egypt won all three men's team events. In the women's contest, Sarah Besbes and Ines Boubakri triumphed in the individual epee and foil events, while Egypt's Menatale Ahmed won the sabre event. Tunisia, South Africa, and Egypt each won one of the women's team events. At the end of the fencing contest, Egypt topped the medal table with 7 gold, 4 silver, and 9 bronze medals. Tunisia is second, South Africa is third, followed by Algeria, Senegal, and Mali. Turning to athletics, South African gift Leo Tlela won the 100 meters in a lifetime best of 10.20 seconds at the British Commonwealth Youth Games in Apia, Samoa on Monday. Abolaji Omotayo and Anikeme Etim clinched a 1-2 Nigerian triumph in girls' 100 meters. South African Werner Fisser won boys' discus. Kumari Taki and Lawi Kosgei secured a 1-2 Kenyan triumph in boys' 1500 meters, while Ugandans Peruth Chemutala and Janet Chemusto was second and third in girls' 1500 meters. In Germany, Botswana's Nigel Amos clocked 1 minute and 43.28 seconds to win the 800 meters at the IAAF World Challenge meet in Berlin, Germany on Sunday. Kenyans Paul Kipsiele Koech and Virginia Nyambura carried the day in the men's 5,000 meters and women's 2,000 meters steeplechase respectively, while Ivory Coast's Marie-Jose Talou placed second in women's 100 meters. In the Czech Republic, Kenya's Perez Jepchirchir won the Birel Prague 10-kilometer women's race in 30 minutes and 55 seconds on Sunday. This is the world's quickest time in the event this year. Another Kenyan, Daniel Chebi, clocked 27 minutes and 42 seconds to win the men's race in the world's third quickest time this year. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ohuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Tuesday morning, September the 8th.
May I be permitted to ask the federal government of Nigeria our own benefit in this part of the country, because we have no government amenities such as potable water, good roads, electric light, etc. Yet, taxes are frequently paid by the indigents. And I mean Prince John is here in Bengi, Obanokunsuk, Obudu, Cross River State, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Security officers carried former Chadian dictator Issa Habre into court on Monday after he refused to take part in his trial on war crimes charges. And that is it for this Tuesday, September the 8th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Strack, as well as post editor Mark Oldman, I'm James Butting in Washington saying, have a lovely day, Africa.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, the European migrant crisis deepens each day. More than 350,000 migrants have fled turmoil and poverty in Africa and the Middle East in search of a better life in Europe. EU leaders are at odds about how to tackle the situation. Next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on Straight Talk Africa, host Shaka Sali and his guests will have an in-depth discussion on the crisis.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat.
The African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time.
With David Bandy.